I didn't get any signal to come out. I just heard applause and thought maybe you wanted me. When I heard the title, The Tale of Two Cities, as I was coming out here, it's peculiar what one thinks about, but my mind went back to Washington, D.C., where I was a week ago. And I was in a taxi cab where there was radio communications. And an office was talking to the taxi driver, and he gave him a certain number on 16th Street, and then said, apartment Q, as in cucumber. And that made me think of when I was in the first grade. I had to stay after school because I did not know how to spell the word witch, W-H-I-C-H. I heard of a little boy who was asked, what is a niche in a church? He says, a niche in the church is the same as niche anywhere else, except you can't scratch it in the church. But this was W-H-I-C-H. And I tried every way. I tried W-I-T-C-H, W-H-C-H, W-C-H, and so forth. And I was, there for easily an hour. And someone out in the schoolyard who was playing came in and sat in back of me and whispered to me, W-H-I-C-H. Do you know that I still could have been in that schoolroom if it hadn't been for that person? And apropos I shouldn't get onto this subject, but apropos of the subject of spelling, I saw an advertisement for sale, partially used electric blanket, D-U-E-L control. Can't you imagine the husband and wife fighting dual control? I once heard of someone who asked a girl, if she was shipwrecked on an island, what would she like to have to read? She said, a tattooed soldier. Remember Chesterton, G.K. Chesterton was once asked, if he were shipwrecked on an island, what book would he desire most? Now, you know the usual answer that's given, the Bible. No. Chesterton said, Thomas's Practical Guide to Shipbuilding. Well, that's a long way from our tale of two cities. First of all, I'm going to talk about cities. Have you done much flying? It's wonderful to fly over the various cities of the world. Each of them has its own pattern. The old city of, it was once called Constantinople. It's marvelous to fly over that in the morning air when the mist is just rising, but the mist is pierced by the minarets of the mosques. And very often on top are those who are calling to prayer. Fly over London, you see the Thames, like a silver serpent, weaving its way through commerce and joy and sorrow. Paris, the Eiffel Tower, I suppose, stands out most. When one comes to Rome, what one looks for first is that greatest of all domes that was ever thrown against the vault of heaven's blue. My recollection of flying over Hong Kong is neon lights. But they're hiding something. They're hiding the densest population of any part of the earth, and also the greatest poverty. So choose any city that you please. It's interesting. Sometimes there's a kind of an anti-urban bias. That is to say, almost a contempt of cities. But cities are beautiful. In parts. Michigan Boulevard in Chicago. Champs-Élysées in Paris. Park Avenue here in New York. And so on, choose your own, and then write to me and tell me why didn't you mention Keokuk? All of them have their beauty. What is the future of cities? Well, here we go to those who are specialists in the subject, and they tell us that by the year 2000, there will be in the United States 18 strip cities containing 2/3 of the population of the United States. A strip city is a megapolis. It's something like that which exists presently between Boston and Washington. Just a continuous city. That seems to be the future of them. Their history? How do they begin? What is their meaning? Who has written about them? Certainly in our day, no one can compare with Lewis Mumford, who has understood perhaps the city better than anyone else. And do you know what he says is the origin of a city? You would never guess. He said it was built as a shrine for the gods, a sanctuary for the holy, a retreat for contemplation. That was the reason cities were built. Then we've had, the history of cities by St. Augustine. Well, that was occasioned by an historical event. Augustine, you remember, wrote about the fall of Rome, the beginning of the 5th century. He called his work the City of God. Actually, it was about two cities. The city of man and the city of God. The city of man, he says, is the city formed by egotism, pride, and avarice, and selfishness. And the city of God, founded on brotherhood, and kindness, compassion, gentleness, and love. Now, this particular work of his, The City of God, was written, as I say, because he was disturbed by the fall of Rome. He spent 18 years writing it. That's the reason the book differs so much from beginning to end. And he talks so much about the fall of Rome, which had to be explained, because here was a civilization that had stood for 7 or 8 centuries, which now collapsed in the face of barbarian invasion. He wrote and talked so much about it that people said, oh, si tacia de Roma, oh, if he had only shut up about Rome. But he tried to explain it and left us this great treatise on the two cities. Then in our day, we have the secular city of Harvey Cox, and also exactly the same idea by a Dutch philosopher, Van Leeuwen. And both of them say that the secular city is the technological city. That's the world we live in. Now, which of these historians of cities is right? Cox, Van Leeuwen, Mumford, I'm not discussing only as regards the origin of cities, or Augustine? Well, Augustine has given the right answer. Listen. There is no such thing as a city. There's no such thing as the city of New York, the city of Pittsburgh, the city of San Francisco, or the city of Washington. There are two cities. Two. One is the White City. The other, the Black City. One, commerce, suburbs, comfort. The other, poverty, unemployment, misery and unhappiness. One the city of the haves, and the other the city of the have-nots. And you cannot find a so-called big city in the United States that has not two cities. That's why when you go to visit a city, you'll find somebody saying to you as he takes you through, "Excuse me, we have to take you down this road. It's not the better part of our city." Apologies made for it. Some years ago, I built a maternity hospital for Negro mothers in a certain city of the South. This hospital was put up not precisely in the poorest section of the city. Do you know that I received letters from men who told me they would never drive down that street again because I had put up a hospital for those people on that street? See, he belonged to one city. They belong to another. I wonder how many in any city have seen both. Well, those in the inner city have seen the outer city, but how many in the outer city have seen the inner city? What's the role of the churches? The classic on this subject is the book by Gibson Winter called The Suburban Captivity of the Churches. Interesting title, isn't it? The Suburban Captivity of the Churches, in which the churches moved out from the inner city out to the suburbs. Became captives of the suburbs. Not all of them, but a movement general enough to merit a title of that kind. What's left in the inner city? Well, churches that once were built by Italians, once by Germans, and by Poles, and by the Irish. They've all moved out. What is left? Steeples, high steeples. Vertical fingers pointing up to heaven. Believe me, those fingers have got to point horizontally. Out to these people. And I, as a bishop, have felt it. And have struggled with it. What should one do? Just simply hold on? Hold on to this property? In the midst of people who have nothing? It kept me awake at night. So I decided to do something.
I decided that instead of us being just a receiving church, we've got to be a giving church. Why not, therefore, get rid of all that was on the property? The rectory, the school, the convent, everything. And put up housing for the poor. I think the Lord would bless us. So what did I do? I wrote to Mr. Robert G. Weaver. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. In which I said, Gibson Winter, as you know, has written of the suburban captivity of the churches. And I write out of a consciousness that there also is an inner city captivity of the churches, in which the right of property is preserved among the propertyless. I believe that the church must do something now like St. Lawrence did when he sold some of the golden vessels of the church and gave it to the poor. And so I want to give the government a church. Now let us be clear. I am not giving this away because I do not need it. Nor can I because I cannot find some way of using it for teaching and caring for the poor. I'm not giving it away because it's a burden on our budget, but because it's a burden on our conscience. I am under the gospel imperative to be a giving church, not a receiving church. So I'm going to crash the giving barrier. Just as technology has crashed the sound barrier. Would you therefore be willing to accept the full and unqualified gift of one of the parishes in the inner city? We will pass the church and all the property attached to it to you or to anyone you may designate. So long as on that property is built within the shortest possible time housing for the poor. I'm not giving what I have, I'm giving what I am. A recognition of servanthood and self-forgetfulness born of him who had compassion on the multitude. This is a new twist, isn't it, in the relationship between church and state. Here the church is giving to the state. And you say, well, we didn't need it. No, that was not the reason. We do need it. In order to be fair, I said to the government, and they came, you inspect the inner city. You visit all the churches we have in the inner city, every one of them. Look them over. Choose the one you want, and that's the one we give. And why have we done it? Simply because I do not want to live in a place of two cities. I want to live in one city. And one people. Oh, the things that come to one's desk. every day. Just before giving this telecast, these were cases that were dropped on my desk. Here, for example, is a mother and father, 7 children, aged 2 months to 12 years. House has 4 rooms. Mother could not use the sink because the drain is broken. Water had to be caught in a bucket. Basement pipes were broken. Water had flooded all through the rooms. Wiring is broken, lights are out. You just can't keep a steeple pointing upwards in the face of that. This other case was dropped on my desk. Family of father, mother, and 6 children burned. Baby girl lost her life. No place to live. Family of 10 children. Age 2 to 20. No known father. No known father. The mother died in her 25th pregnancy. Girls 10, 12, and 14 are taking birth control pills. One has already had an illegitimate child. These are the problems. Believe me, we can talk about planning, and we need it. Great civic planning, but all the while roofs are leaking. Children are unfed. Fathers are unable to find work. These are the things that oppress us. We have to do something this very day. Would to God that we could get some of the families out in the suburbs and the other cities to come and get their hands dirty. Really, hands dirty. You know, it's like working with lepers. Does leprosy frighten you? Touch a leper. Touch a leper and you'll love a leper. They're carrying the suffering of the world around with them. And so it is with the poor. And if we could just get families and young people to meet young people, families to meet families, to try and change this world. So let our planning go on. But in the meantime, let us do away with the tale of 2 cities and have just 1 city. Whatever it be, but a city in which at least we're all brothers under the fatherhood of God.
Bishop Sheen will return in a moment.
I just looked over there and saw my angel with his wings folded. He didn't have anything to do this particular telecast. He looks kind of downcast, too. We'll keep him busy next time. Thanks for being with us. Bye now, and God love you.